Because, Carr answered. The Maasai are a very fragile people, extremely tall, extremely thin. Traditionally, they eat only meat, milk, and blood. Good God, said Barbara. Carr smiled at her. They produce the best-smelling sweat in the world. What? Their perspiration smells beautiful. It's a heavy, dense, clean odor you could bottle and sell in your boutique. Maasai perspiration parfum. Barbara shook her head. I don't think it would be a hit. The Maasai are so brittle, Carr said. They can never win in hand-to-hand combat. As soon as their ancient enemies, the Kikuyu, would penetrate the Maasai's disciplined formations and go at them with their hands and feet, the Maasai would lose. Maintaining this Roman militarism was their only way of surviving as a people for 2,000 years. Electronic music was blaring from the stage. In fact, added Carr, the Maasai are so brittle they have trouble bearing children. Over the centuries, they have needed the women of other tribes. The Maasai were not just militarily defensive, but these enormously tall, skinny people had to be militarily aggressive to survive. Phew, Fletch shook his head. Witch doctors? A lost Roman city? Carr, you are a surprising fellow. Carr shrugged. It's just a hobby horse of mine. If anything works out, I might make a bit of a name for myself. It's so crazy anyway, I don't mind going to a witch doctor about it. You never know what little thing might come out of traditional wisdom. Are you actually spending time and money looking for this place? Barbara asked. Time and money. I have a camp set up. Sheila's there now. Is Sheila your wife? Might as well be. Dear old thing's been with me years now. Barbara looked shyly at him. Has either of you a degree in anthropology, archaeology, anything? Good heavens, no. Barely finished school. But to paraphrase the ignoramus regarding art, I'll know when I see something out of the ordinary. Fletch smiled. And is your camp in the south, in the hills, near a river? Carr nodded. Exactly. Figured the Romans needed a certain altitude, a supply of fresh water, and a river big enough to give them access to, yet protection from, the sea. Fletch pushed his chair back. We won't tell anyone. He couldn't imagine Frank Jaffe's reaction to such a story anyway. Avalanches, mudslides, major earthquakes, airplane crashes, train wrecks, mass murders, acts of terrorism, airport bombings. Be sure and phone in if you get any good stuff. Hello, Frank. I'm on to a search for a lost Roman city on the East African coast. One of my sources is the witch doctor of Theca. Frank? Tell anybody you like, Carr said. Harambe. All in good clean fun. Better than poaching elephant tusks. Go for it. Carr smiled at Barbara. I thought you'd prefer the goat to the beef. Barbara said, what goat? Anytime you'll have a choice around here between goat and beef, Carr said, standing up, choose the goat. Barbara was looking at the empty plates. I've been eating goat? It's much more tender, Carr said, than beef. Tastier, too. I've been eating goat? I ate Billy the goat? Suddenly, Barbara looked ill. On the dark sidewalk outside the Norfolk Hotel, Juma crossed his arms over his chest. His feet were planted far apart. Carr had just driven away in the Land Rover. Juma said to Fletch, at the Shamba in Theca, you said my friends were drunk. Sorry, Fletch said. Didn't mean to insult your friends. They looked pretty drunk to me. How do you decide friends? Fletch said, I don't care about drunkenness. How do you decide who is your friend? Is that something you decide about? What? Barbara asked. How can you decide someone is your friend without deciding everyone else is not your friend? I'm not sure I understand, Fletch said. Do you decide who is your enemy? That's not the way things happen, Juma said. Oh, I see. Things just happen, Juma said. When you first saw me, I was with those boys. They were drunk. I don't decide if they are my friends or not my friends. Maybe they are my enemies. How could you decide? Barbara shook her head. I am very, very tired. I don't have to decide that. Juma grabbed her arm.
That's right.
Barbara said something right? Juma looked all around.
Deciding everything like that, all the time, north, east, south, west, is very hard.
Barbara asked, Do you mean difficult or harsh? Fletch finished. Juma turned and began walking away from them down the street. He waved.
Nice time.
Watching him, Barbara asked, Does he mean have a nice time? Or we had a nice time? Fletch finished.
I don't know.
Barbara took Fletch's arm as they started into the hotel. But he understands Fletch is your father. And he's sorry. Chapter 16. Fletch had a funny line ready, but although he had used it before, he couldn't remember it. Instead, he said, Hello?
Did you both sleep well?
So far. Fletch remembered the line.
Is this Fletch, too?
Afraid not. Carr here again.
Oh. Fletch finally got his head off the pillow and rolled over.
There was a message waiting for us at the hotel when we got back last night. My father had been here during the afternoon.
I'm sure he was, old chap.
And that he'd call us in the morning.
I'm sure he meant to.
This is morning.
The window was filled with gray daylight. In the bed beside him, Barbara had not noticed.
Shortly before 8 o'clock, Nairobi time. To my surprise, I'm downstairs about to have breakfast. I only have an hour or so this morning.
That's very nice.
Hate to awaken you this way, your first real day here and all that. Your father called me a couple of hours ago. Something's come up, you see. If you could pull yourself together and join me for a cup of coffee, I could fly away with a sense of duty done.
Something's happened to my father?
Yes.
I'll be right down.
The Kenyan coffee is quite pleasant, but you might want to cut it with milk or hot water.
The waiter was pouring black coffee into Fletcher's cup. Carr was finishing a large bowl of fruit. He said, The pineapple here is probably better than anywhere.
Barbara will be right down.
Yes.
There was a huge, round, beautiful breakfast buffet in the middle of the Lord Delamere dining room.
What's up? Fletch asked.
The senior Fletcher called me about 5:30 this morning. It seems there's been a spot of trouble.
Carr was right. The coffee did need cutting.
What kind of trouble?
It seems that yesterday the senior Fletch, doubtlessly nervous about your imminent arrival, began quaffing the local brew a bit early on.
He got drunk.
With the resultant loss of sense of time and place.
Which is why he didn't show up.
Sometime during the day, he's not sure just when, he found himself in an altercation at the Thorntree Cafe. Someone, he says, insulted the Queen.
What Queen?
The Queen of England. Elizabeth Regina Twice.
What does he care about the Queen of England? He's born and bred Montana.
We all care about the Queen of England out here, old chap. She's very fond of Kenya. Been here twice.
Carr drew his knife across the surfaces of the two fried eggs the waiter had brought him.
What came up was his fist. He's aware of having done damage to two or three people, seems to remember the sounds of glass smashing, seeing one of those little tables in matchsticks on the ground, and of being very angry at a placating askari, although whether he actually hit him is something the senior Fletcher is trying to reason through this morning. Why don't you go get your fruit?
What's an askari?
A guard, possibly a cop. It will make a difference when this matter comes to trial.
He got into a bar fight.
So he testifies.
He was doing that sort of thing at age 15, or so my mother testifies.
I'd give you a rhyming couplet about the boy in every man, but I never was that strong on Wordsworth.
So where is he now, in jail?
Not yet. He's gone to ground to reconstruct his head and think things through. I had the discretion not to ask from where he was calling. He'll have to face the tune sooner or later, of course. Nairobi isn't like London or New York, you know. Everyone here knows who Fletcher is. On the other hand, people here didn't used to take this sort of bashing up all that seriously.
Mother warned me he was apt to evade emotional moments.
Did she? Is that what she said? How very kind of her.
Understanding, I'd say.
So why did he invite me here if it was going to be so upsetting for him?
Sometimes you don't know your conga has a loose thread.
Is that from Wordsworth?
Maybe. It makes a great deal of difference whether the askari he hit was a private watchman or a real policeman.
You indicated yesterday the law is very strict here.
Very. It has lost its sense of humor.
Listen, Carr, why don't you get some breakfast? Fried eggs you have to order from the waiter.
You probably know where my father is.
Probably.
Why don't I go to him now, get this confrontation over? Maybe I can even be a help to him.
I've got a better idea. Why don't you fly up to Lake Turkana with me today? I've got to deliver a scientist up there. I'll be coming right back. You can have a swim. We can have lunch. Nile perch, nice time.
My father, put yourself in his shoes, Fletch. He's got a hell of a hangover, probably a bloody nose. He's liable for arrest. Last thing anybody would want under such circumstances is for a dazzling kid who looks like he's never farted to come walking in offering aid and assistance, calling him daddy.
I farted.
Glad you heard it.
Fletch looked at the buffet.
Guess I'll get some breakfast.
Breakfast, said Carr, is the only fortification left to modern man.
While Fletch circumnavigated the breakfast buffet, he saw Barbara enter the room, kiss Carr on the cheek, and sit down. On his plate, Fletch placed pineapple, scrambled eggs, sausage, bacon, and toast. He also took a glass of orange juice.
Just explaining to your wife, Carr said, that the senior Fletcher is held up today by a sticky legal problem. Suggesting you both fly up to Turkana with me.
Nice of you.
Barbara's eyes were filled with questions.
About a 2.5-hour flight each way. Lake Turkana is very interesting. Used to be called the Jade Sea. Plenty of room in the plane. Carries 8 passengers, and there's only this one small scientist going. A Dr. McCoy. He won't mind at all.
Barbara said, I'm a little sick of airplanes.
Carr looked at his watch.
Trouble is, I have to be going. I told Dr. McCoy I'd be ready to take off at 10.
You go, Fletch, Barbara said. I really need a down day. There's a swimming pool somewhere here. I've never even looked in the aviaries in the courtyard yet.
Sure you'll be all right?
Fletch was eating rapidly.
If I get bored, I can go walk around that mosque near here. I've never seen a real mosque.
I'll get the car. You'll be out front in 5 minutes, Fletch.
Sure.
After Carr left the breakfast room, Barbara said, Fletch, darling, there is something about your father that doesn't make sense.
Fletch drained his cup of the strong coffee.
We knew that before we arrived.
Chapter 17. Barbara shoved Fletch away from the bathroom mirror.
Is this what life with you is going to be like?
Fletch was brushing his teeth.
What do you mean?
She put toothpaste on her own brush.
Always running away, always being somewhere else.
She already had changed into her swimsuit.
Carr invited both of us, Fletch said. You said you didn't want to come. You said you were sick of airplanes, want to spend the day resting by the pool.
Lovely, Barbara said. You fly me to East Africa, worry my mother frantic, then fly off into the bush, leaving me in some tropical hotel.
I agreed to go. I thought you would want to go, too.
I said I wanted to stay here. I thought you'd say you wanted to stay here, too.
Will you let me rinse my mouth, please?
Barbara stepped aside, but not much.
We got married. Big event in life. We flew halfway around the world, totally unprepared. Big event. To meet your father for the first time, which should be a big event, except he decides he's got something better to do than meet us. Yesterday, you saw someone get stabbed to death in a bathroom. Big, bloody event. And today you want to go flying off into the African bush to some place we've never heard of with someone we don't even know.
You're losing your sense of humor.
When is enough enough for you? Can't you sit still a damned minute?
Okay, Fletch said. I'll go downstairs and tell Carr I'm not going. We'll sit by the pool.
She had put the cap back on the toothpaste and placed the tube neatly on the counter.
Barbara turned and faced Fletch.
No, you go.
Suddenly, her tight fist, much smaller and harder than Fletch had realized, smashed into Fletch's stomach, low, just inside his right hip bone.
Take that with you.
Fletch lowered his head. He looked up at her.
No one's ever hit me there before.
First time for everything.
Fletch walked into the hallway outside the bathroom.
I can't stay now.
That's a nice excuse.
Take it as you like it. See you at dinner.
Chapter 18. How's married life so far?
Carr drove the Land Rover along the left-hand side of Harry Thuka Road. Half a block from the Hotel Norfolk, on the left, just before the Rotary, Fletch noticed a police station jail. After a moment, Fletch answered, "There's a difference between men and women."
"Yes," Carr said, "there is. Shall I sing you a few million songs about that?"
"Never mind. You may have only one life to live." He shifted down.
"Okay. You know, Barbara and I had a disagreement."
Of the men who walked along the road, many were with children. A few raindrops appeared on the windshield.
"Hope Barbara's having a nice day by the pool," Fletch said. "Never begrudge Africa its rain," Carr said. "We'll go a bit out of our way to have lunch at the fishing lodge on Lake Turkana, which is nothing to write home about. But before that, you can swim in their pool, which is..."
"Which is what?"
"Something to write home about."
"How can a swimming pool be something to write home about?"
"You'll want to swim by the time we get there."
Carr was smiling to himself. Fletch noticed a dog-eared paperback on Carr's dashboard. "Murder by Rote, by Josie Fletcher." Fletch picked it up.
"You read my mother?"
"Her biggest fan. Have you read that one?" Fletch was thumbing through the book.
"How can I tell?"
"She must be a very sensible woman, your mother."
"Sensible?"
Adjectives sometimes used to describe his mother always amazed Fletch. Sensible. Observant. Clever about clocks set wrong and dogs that don't bark. Practical. Wise. Logical. Adjectives used by her few fans.
"Yes, she might notice if her house were on fire, but she'd probably finish writing her chapter before doing anything about it."
Carr shifted in his seat.
"Have you seen her lately?"
"Last Saturday, the day I was married."
"Still, I gather a woman without much education, she supported herself, and you at a hard profession."
"I appreciate it." Fletch tossed the book back onto the dashboard.
"We had a good conversation. I really pinned her down about my father. My hearing from him forced the issue."
"Oh?" Carr cleared his throat.
"What did she say about him?"
"She said she loved him. His disappearance left her in a state of permanent shock. She's been trying to solve mysteries ever since."
"Maybe the quality of a writer is determined by the universality of the mystery he's trying to solve."
Leaning against his door, right arm over the chair back, Fletch stared at Carr.
"A pilot has lots of time to think," Carr said, as if excusing himself.
"Literally, his head is in the clouds.
Why does human life take the forms it does? Family, friends? What are these institutions humans keep creating, destroying, and recreating for ourselves? Religions, nations, families, businesses, clubs? What are they for? Given the uniqueness of life, how can one person purposely take the life of another for any reason?"
"My mother supports herself by writing detective stories," Fletch said. "There's nothing mysterious about it." They were stuck in traffic.
"What are we?" Carr mused.
Fletch said, "We are all mysteries waiting to be solved."
"Now you've got the beat."
Carr beat out a little rhythm with his fingers on the steering wheel.
"One has to think something."
The traffic began to move.
"Odd, though, that your mother never told you much about your father. She must be articulate."
"She really hasn't known all these years whether he's dead or alive."
"She had him declared dead."
"She had to get on with her own life."
"Therefore you thought he was dead."
"Kids believe what they're told. When the courts say your daddy is dead, the kid says, 'Okay, my daddy is dead. What's for lunch?'"
"What was for lunch?"
"Usually the question, how do you spell hors d'oeuvres? My mother never could spell hors d'oeuvres. It's a wonder she kept serving them up in her books."
"All this is more of a surprise to you than I thought."
"You don't get used to not having a father."
"And then again, you do."
"Then someone comes along and says, 'Here's Papa.'"
"Where is Papa?"
Carr swung out to pass.
"Walter Fletcher has screwed up. She also told me she never told me much about Walter because Walter wasn't there to defend himself."
Carr breathed a whistle through his teeth.
"Nice lady."
"Sometimes any news is better than no news.
I'm not so sure.
Car turned left onto the airport road. Barbara's not missing much of a trip. Too murky, really, to see the green hills of Africa. Still, she's getting her rest by the sunless pool, and your company is pleasant. I guess you're the one person in the world I don't have to worry about stealing murder by rote before I finish it.
Chapter 19. Car?
Fletch banged his fist on the pilot's shoulder. Carr shoved the radiophone forward off his right ear.
There's a body down there, a man on the ground.
Carr leaned over Fletch and looked through the starboard window of the airplane. He dipped the right wing so he could see better.
So there is.
The naked man was lying on his side, far from any bush. Carr said,
I was wondering what the vultures had found for themselves.
The circling birds had drawn Fletch's attention to the man on the ground. They had flown about 2 hours northwest from Nairobi, over the White Hills and the eastern edge of Lake Naivasha. Looking down, Fletch had seen the enormous white gin palace at the edge of the lake. Carr had pointed out the great gash in the land called the Rift Valley.
Someday, we're told, Carr shouted over the sound of the engine, the Red Sea will come flooding down that rift. Hope I've got my waders on that day.
Now, Fletch knew by the chart in his lap, they were somewhere east of the Leuchengamata Hills. There were no shambas below them. The scientist they were transporting to Lake Turkana, Dr. McCoy, had taken a back seat in the airplane. A little, very white man in a seersucker suit, wide-brimmed safari hat, and canvas bush boots, he coughed continuously and spat into his handkerchief frequently. He had not asked why Fletch was accompanying them to Lake Turkana on the doctor's chartered plane. He had not asked anything or said much. Carr turned the plane and swooped lower over the figure on the ground. As Carr did so, Fletch pointed out the body to McCoy in the seat behind him.
Is he dead? Fletch asked Carr. Look at the hyenas.
Carr could not point while he was turning the plane again.
They're just waiting, and the vultures are waiting for the hyenas.
Carr was bringing the plane around to land near the man. Leaning forward, McCoy said, Leave him. Carr looked over his shoulder at him.
He was left there to die, McCoy said.
Ah, culture clash, Carr said, facing forward. He's an anthropologist or something, I suppose he's right. Carr was still making for a landing.
I said leave him, McCoy shouted. You're not to interfere with their nature.
McCoy began coughing. Carr turned his head so McCoy could hear him.
I haven't your education, McCoy. It's my nature I must sleep with.
McCoy spat into his handkerchief. Just after the wheels of the plane touched the ground, Fletch threw up the door next to his seat and held it open. Carr had taught him to do that, taking off from Wilson Airport, to rid the cockpit of the terrible immediate heat on the ground.
Poor bastard. He's been pungered.
The man's skull was split open. Brain matter was visible. There was the great patience of the nearly dead in the man's eyes as he watched Carr and Fletch approach.
How can he be alive? Fletch asked.
Tough nut. Carr hunched next to the man and spoke with him. The man answered slowly from a parched throat through a swollen tongue. He never closed his mouth completely. McCoy stood coughing under the wing of the plane. He had only gotten out of the cockpit to get out of the heat. Carr said,
He says he stole 6 goats.
Honest of him to say so.
They caught up to him, cut his head open with a machete, and left him to die.
Carr looked at the birds circling above them.
To be eaten.
He looked over to where some hyenas sat next to a bush.
Rude justice.
Why did he tell you the truth? Why doesn't he say he was robbed or something? Carr stood up.
Under prevailing circumstances, vultures about to pluck out one's eyes, hyenas about to begin their feed on one by first cracking off one's hands and one's feet, is probably well advised, happier, if you catch my drift, if one is honest with oneself as to how one fell victim to such circumstances.
For 6 goats?
Nothing is more important than goats. They rank right up there with wives in the local economy.
Carr stooped to look into the skull wound. He had brought a medical kit from the airplane. In every way, goats are the scourge of the Third World. A little fresh blood continued to trickle onto the dried, crusted blood.
Flies were everywhere over the wound and over the naked man. The flies walked on the man's eyeballs. They probed his nostrils. They walked along his lips and entered and exited his mouth. "Why didn't they kill him?" Fletch asked. "Why leave him like this?" "Having 6 goats stolen can ruin a family for at least a generation." Carr wrapped gauze around the man's head. "Just trying to hold his brains in, although I guess I cleaned up worse things off the cockpit floor. There, let's get him up." As they lifted the man upright and began to walk, carry him between them to the airplane, the hyenas began to yell angrily. They paced up and down in protest, coming nearer. "We're certainly upsetting nature," Carr said. "May God forgive me." McCoy did nothing to help them lift the man onto the rearmost seat of the plane. Carr buckled him in. At no point did the man cry out, groan, show pain. Nor did he seem to notice being rescued. He showed nothing but patience. Buckling himself into his seat, Fletch said, "He seems to accept all this." The hyenas surrounded the airplane. Carr said, "He knows he'd done wrong." Chapter 20. "Strip and dip," Carr said. Fletch already had his sneakers and wool socks off. Carr had said he did not want to guess the temperature in either degrees centigrade or Fahrenheit. He said figuring such an astronomical number would thin his hair. It was hot. The other side of the none-too-serious fence, behind the fishing lodge's cabins, were a few of the Turkana tribe. Not all wore clothes. Fletch dropped his cut-off ski pants. He plunged into the swimming pool. "Yow!" Standing on the pool edge, Carr laughed. "Something to write home about? This is impossible. It's freezing. Is it just the contrast because I'm so hot?" "No, the water temperature really is near freezing." Fletch's teeth were chattering. "How do they do it?" The fishing lodge at Lake Turkana was a terrace, an open wooden lodge and a half dozen wooden cabins on a sand bluff overlooking the lake. "They don't do it. The rate of evaporation in this heat is so rapid, the water in a pool like this gets very cold indeed. Would you believe it?" Hugging his own shoulders, Fletch said, "I believe it. You coming in?" "Not on your life. You think I'm crazy?" Fletch did a fast crawl to the ladder and pulled himself out of the pool. "Swimming pools are for tourists," Carr said. "This one sure is." Fletch shivered on the pool ledge. Carr looked down Fletch's body and frowned. "Is that a birthmark?" Fletch looked down at himself. The lowest right side of his stomach was blue. The mark was bigger than a fist. It was as big as an outstretched hand. Fletch said, "I must have been born again." Carr leaned over and prodded Fletch's flesh with his fingers. "First birthmark I ever saw that's swollen." "I didn't even feel it," Fletch said. "I must have bumped into something in the hotel room. A strange hotel room in the dark." "Sorry," Carr said. "None of my business." Fletch prodded with his own fingers the great blue welt where Barbara had hit him. It didn't hurt. Carr said, "I'll be on the terrace when you're ready. I'll buy us shandies before lunch."